Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio on this beautiful morning. Today is May 15th and the year is 2018, and on the way into work this morning, if you can call this work, one of the things I noticed and said to myself, usually I don't like them, but it was a pleasure to see dandelions all over the place. Finally, we were going to get some weather here in the middle of the week. And a lot of things are happening in Northfield. One of the things tonight is Defeater Jesse James Day's meeting. They meet once a month and then a couple of times in August and September. Looking forward to that big celebration. And let's see, I think the first parade and community celebration in the area, Rice County for sure, is Morristown's Dam Days, the first weekend of June. Defeated Jesse James Days will be well represented there. Oh, yes, I just enjoy listening to Dwayne Eddy and Rebel Rouser. My guest yesterday said, what was the name of that song you played in the beginning? And I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, that's right. People are so much younger than me, they don't remember this big hit in 1958. Well, I do have a guest in studio, and I'm going to tell you her name right now. It's Tess Figuera. And Tess, why don't you say good morning?
Good morning.
Hey, that sounds good. Well, you come with a very interesting background today. And on this particular show, what we do is we talk about what you do, and then we talk about you. How does that sound?
That sounds really good.
All right. Tess Figuera, strategic interventionist and awakening coach. And she's going to have a big show on Sunday, Courage and Vision Moving Forward. And I like to talk about that right at the very beginning. This is coming up on May 20th in Bloomington, and it's called Open Heart Mind Coaching Presents in collaboration with Decluttering Key and 460's Journal. It's called Beyond Grief, Declaim Your Spirit. Reclaim your spirit, excuse me. All right, Tess, tell me what you do, will you please?
Yes, well, first of all, thank you for having me on this show. I want to thank you and Jeff for bringing me here, and special thank you to Adrian Thomas. I'm an awakening coach, and what that means, I'll just give you a brief story of...
Take your time, we have 2 hours.
I was afraid of that.
Yeah.
I was afraid and excited about that. 2 hours, what are we going to talk in 2 hours? But I came to my life, I was a... an accountant for 25 plus years. And there was a time where I couldn't do one thing. You know, there's this piece of paper that I could do in my sleep. And I kept procrastinating. I couldn't do it. It was just like a dead end for me. And that was an awakening moment for me. Like, what is going on here? You know, I had the house, I had the dog and the cat and the kids and the husband, and I couldn't move forward with my life. That I was really in that stuck position. And that part of me, that journey, led me to this awakening where I am now. So from an accountant, I became an awakening coach. And what I do is I help people reconnect back to their relationships with their self, relationship with their significant other, relationship with spirit or God or universe or whatever people want to call that higher power, that deeper connection with themselves that's missing, which was missing in my part. I was so exhausted, so depleted. I lost connection with that life force energy and was running on fumes.
Okay.
I was polluting the universe.
Polluting?
Okay. Well, you know, if you want to, if you're coming from a depleted energy, then you're contributing more to the negativity, to the chaos, to the confusion, rather than being part of the solution.
And I had a friend who passed away, Bernie Hughes, and I would we were real good friends, and I'd stop by his place once or twice a week, and I remember him sitting at the kitchen table. We were having a cup of coffee, and he says, "You know what, Wayne? I just don't have any zip anymore."
Yeah.
And he was a guy that was very active in all kinds of things, a farmer, a businessman, and a dancer.
Yeah.
And he was involved in various nonprofits, etc., and always upfront and happy. And then sitting there having a cup of coffee broke my heart, and I'll never forget his quote, "I just don't have any zip anymore."
Yes.
And that's kind of what you might do, is you might help people find a way to get out of that emptiness and just sit there and say, "Where's all this activity I used to do and have fun doing, and now I'm just kind of sitting here?" And you try to help people get out of that.
Correct. Yeah. Reconnect back to that zip, to that spark.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So go ahead and tell me more. Then after you tell us all about what you do, then we'll talk about you.
Okay.
All
great.
Right. So just so people and myself have an idea of what you do, and you hear a lot about life coaches now, mm-hmm. something you never heard about 10 years ago.
Right.
But I had individuals that were life coaches on the air before.
Yes.
And I just want to find out how you work your business or your clients.
Okay. So this is where my background in accounting comes back. It's all about reconciling. It's all about making sure things are adding up, right? So it's like, I call it reconciling the ledgers of life. We're like taking inventory of what works, what doesn't work. We salvage what works, you know, and get rid of, you know, we're weeding out belief systems, belief structures that kind of, it helped at some point in time to, you know, to survive in the world. But sometimes those structures get in the way of a bigger purpose for us. So that's part of the awakening coaching. Now, there's another aspect of what I do, which is a strategic intervention, where we're habitual creatures, right? We have certain habits, and sometimes our habits decide what we do. We say one thing, okay, I'm going to do this. It's New Year's. I'm going to make a goal of it. And then 1 week later, no. So people fall back into habituated patterns and habituated beliefs. And they don't know that, when we don't know what we don't know that we didn't know. Right? And I think Les Brown said that. And so that's strategic intervention. How do you interrupt habituated patterns and actually consciously bring about the results that you want to create? So those two things, strategic intervention and awakening, it's like the left brain and the right brain merging together, so that there's a unification process in the coaching that I do, so that people don't feel fragmented, or people don't feel like they're all over the place. So scattered. Oh, I don't know. I'm so confused. You know, they're just all over the place trying to do one thing, but their energy is all over the place. So what I help them with is unify it in, like, you know, one big ledger of life. So, you know, their balance sheet, your assets, your, you know, where are you owing people? Mm-hmm. So, but I do it in terms of energy. Where are you depleted? Where are you spending so much energy? What is it that you're trying to create? So it's all bringing it all back to wholeness, an integrated approach, so that people are coming from a unified energy rather than wanting something and then doing another. So, you know, there's an inner conflict, nothing gets done, or there's chaos that's created. So how can we transcend that and consciously create the life that we deserve and the life that we desire and the life that we came here to do.
Now, is this applicable to businessmen and women, housewives, clergy, you know, who needs this particular talent that you have in getting people organized? What walk of life is it for everybody?
Well, yes and no. Everybody who has that calling for a better life, calling for people know when they're not fully expressing themselves. People know when they're feeling limited, and that limitation translates into frustration, into anger, into resentment, into not communicating with other people, into hiding out, or, you know, I'll just have pets.
Yeah.
Right? So they're limited in their connection, in their engagement with life, in letting life unfold through them. So yes, it's for everybody, but I work with people who seek out that they really want this. So some people are, we're all in different stages of life and different process. And sometimes I got hit, right? I was so stubborn. I was so set in my ways that I got to be hit by like a 2x4, cosmic 2x4, I call it. So I wasn't really searching for anything. I didn't know that there was anything wrong with my life. I thought the people around me were the ones messing up my life. But, you know, I ran out of fingers to blame other people. So, yes, clergymen, especially, there's a lot of responsibilities, obligation that's put upon them. Sometimes they're really conflicted what it is that, you know, are they just going to say what's the right thing to say? You know, what are they sacrificing? Where are they giving their power? You know, so it's all about coming into authenticity, right? And single moms. I work with couples, whether they're married or not, to enrich the relationship and still be the person they're meant to be. The person that they know who they are inside. Sometimes when we're in a relationship, we tend to put masks on and, you know, I love you, Wayne. I'll do everything for you. At the same time, neglecting and abandoning myself. So that's that kind of relationship never, ever works. You know, there's an imbalance there that it's out of alignment. So, yes, to men and women, business owners, especially business owners who are neglecting their life in pursuit of the business, in pursuit of success in life, and their personal life is not working so much. So they hide out at work. They work harder because they're getting results there, but not so much in their personal aspect. So,
and,
yes.
And basically, the idea then is to slow down or speed up, whatever it takes to enjoy your life, mm-hmm. and not commit yourself to your business or whatever and have that narrow thinking. Why don't you just kind of open up, still be concentrate on being successful, whatever the endeavor is, but also enjoy yourself. It's later than you think.
Right.
And for example, now we'll just use this show. For example, people sometimes are real nervous to come on the radio and what are we going to talk about for 2 hours? And the advice is, just be yourself.
Yes.
And that's what you're trying to do, is have people have less stress and anxiety.
Right.
Succeed at what you're doing, but just be yourself, true to your own identity.
Right.
Am I interpreting it correctly?
Correctly, yes. Very, very right on. It's spot on. Thank you.
Okay. Question is, you were an accountant, and mm-hmm. that's all black and white.
Yes.
Period. There's
yes.
No other way to do it but the way math and ledgers say to do it.
Right. Numbers don't lie.
unless you're cooking the books, I don't know. But did you When you left your accounting position to become a life coach, did you have any formal education or direction from anybody? How do you jump from sitting behind a desk doing numbers to all of a sudden sitting in a chair talking to somebody on how to enjoy life?
Thank you for asking that. I became very obsessed. It was like I became this seeker. Like there was, I couldn't focus on work anymore. I was procrastinating, and then I got into self-help. I read a lot of books. I got drawn into Tony Robbins. You heard of Tony Robbins?
The minister?
No.
Who's Tony Robbins? That name is in my head, but...
Tony Robbins, people might call him a motivational speaker, but he doesn't like being called motivational speaker. So I actually attended his events. I got certified in his coaching program, which is actually called a strategic intervention, which is what I call myself, strategic interventionist. I'm a graduate of Robbins Madonna's, which is Tony Robbins and Chloe Madonna's strategic intervention program. And I didn't stop there. I did NLP. I did master strategy
what
coaching.
What is NLP?
NLP is neuro-linguistic programming, where we basically, rewire the neurons, the brain, and reframe how we say things. The languaging has impact on what we do or how we behave or how we create results. So it's basically reprogramming what we already know in a way that creates results, in a way that is in alignment with that which you want to make happen.
Now, in this day and age, we have smartphones, and one of the things that I don't like is when you send a text to somebody or an email, and the interpretation can be any way because there's no contact and sound of a voice. There's no, like you talk, you use your hands and your arms. And if you sent me a text, I wouldn't know that something may be dead serious or it might be a kind of a joke because you just read it and interpret it the way you think.
Right.
Do you work with people to learn how to read text messages and emails and try not to interpret them in a negative way or positive way?
Yes, definitely. Well, I work with the different dimensions of that. So first, okay, I got a text from you. I don't know how to interpret it. So, or let's use a client. A client got a text from you, and she's complaining to me, oh, Wayne just broke up with me over a text message, you know. So what are the things... What does she make it mean about herself? You know, what are her options? What is she believing it? You know, what are the interpretations? What are the stories that she's creating out of that text message? What's stopping her from calling you? You know, what's stopping her from mending or you know, so there's so many things that I can coach that person in the way that she's reacting, because how she's reacting usually connected from a past, you know, the information is already there. So it's not your text message that is triggering. It's just a trigger, but the information is already there. Does that make sense? So how she's reacting to that information is the same reaction she's reacted to in the past, the same way. So it's already been there. So what I help people with is to kind of go deep down to the issue where that first information was put in there, clear that up so that that person can now respond to you. You know, it's like an overly explanation of things, but that's what I do as a life coach. I don't do surface things. I go deep into the root cause of the suffering.
Well, Tess Figuera is my guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair at 9:22. We'll continue that conversation, but first of all, I have to tell you a little bit about the QB. That's a quarterback club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield. Plenty of parking, by the way. And when you're at the QB, you can take a look at the old depot. That thing, I think, is going to be completed this summer, and you can watch that progress. But of course, the breakfasts are what I like to talk about, and they serve breakfast up till 10 o'clock each morning, and that's Monday through Saturday. And, of course, you can get anything from, you know what I'm going to say, a cup of coffee and a donut, or maybe you want egg sunny side up with some bacon or maybe some sausage or maybe hash browns. Whatever you want, they got it available, and they serve it fast. It's inexpensive. It's delicious. We're talking about the locally owned and locally operated Quarterback Club on Highway 3 and 3rd Street in Northfield, Minnesota. My guest this morning on KYMN Radio, Tess Figuera. And Tess, it sounds like you're using part of the 12 steps in part of what we're talking about in regards to searching yourself and your higher power.
12 steps. I've heard about it. I actually, part of my whole transformation, or not transformation, part of my whole makeup was a father who is an alcoholic, and I wish he did the 12-step program. I did look up the 12 steps before. I can't remember top of my head right now what it is, but I remember back in 2012 when I was really struggling with spiritual depression, and I was really finding this place of acceptance and peace. So I was going through I was looking for a meditation group in the Christian world, or Catholic, it's called centering prayer, but it really is a meditation in the Eastern world. So I checked it out, and there's an AA group that's doing the 12-step program, and they have the centering prayer with it. So I was like called to attend this AA group, and I'm like driving there. I was like, why am I going there? I'm not an alcoholic. And I didn't know at that time that there was a connection between me being a child of an alcoholic and my alcoholic father, and, you know, the way I became closed off and very logical, stubborn, rigid, left-brained person.
Were you doing AA or were you doing Al-Anon?
No, I didn't do either one.
Oh, okay.
But I was I was looking for a group of people practicing centering prayer, and they had it at this AA group.
Okay.
And I forgot where it was. It's been many years ago. So I went in there. You know, I just followed intuition. I just was following this call. There was just this draw to me to go there anyway, even though I could have said, no, I don't want to go, and turned around, right? But I still went. I followed that intuition, that guidance. And then a speaker came up and talked about his vulnerability as, you know, he apologized to his family. He shared about his story about being so weak to say no to the alcohol. And all of a sudden, I felt tear run down my cheeks. And this person transformed into my father. And it was my father's voice I was hearing. And I'm so sorry, you know, this and that. I'm so weak to refuse alcohol. And I hope you can forgive me in your hearts. I'm like, wow. It's like I was crying and I was shaking. And it was such cathartic release for me. So I guess that's part of the 12-step program, is the owning of that shortcomings.
Regardless of what those shortcomings might be.
Right.
Like maybe being able to converse with your spouse.
Right. And saying I'm sorry, making amends, and then and that's part of that whole 12-step thing. I can't enumerate the 12 steps, though.
Well, how about clinical clinically trained doctors, like mm-hmm. psychologists, mm-hmm. Do they have any not animosity, but do they suggest, hey, you're going to a life coach when you should be seeing me because I'm trained in psychology and can help you figure out your problems or be a person that you can really talk to? Mm-hmm. Or are people like yourself, life coaches, accepted in that world, or you don't get involved in any way?
Well, it's interesting that there's a lot of psychologists and a lot of therapists who train under Tony Robbins and Chloe Madonis to get this strategic intervention because it creates permanent results. It's the life coaching is about moving forward. You know, it's exactly what I'm talking about on May 20th. It's the courage moving forward, creating that vision, rather than just going, looking at the same problem over and over again and circling and pathologizing and, you know. So there shouldn't be an animosity if we're looking at the benefit of the client, the welfare of the client, moving them forward rather than, you know, just having them be in therapy over and over again. For me, when I graduate my clients after 6 months working with me, I take really, pride in that, that they graduated, they're moving forward. They don't need me anymore. Like, yay.
Do you have a, when these clients are with you for 6 months on a weekly or biweekly basis, do you have a program, a pamphlet, a book, something that they write in, a diary, to see where they started and where they got to be right. by graduation? Do you have them do that?
Yes, they do. So my process is really individualized, highly, you know, what you're going through, even though it looks similar, is different from another fellow or another fellow, just because of different belief
sure.
programming, you know, culture and experiences and that. But it's kind of the same process, but it's still listening in to what that person really needs. And yes, there's a lot of work involved. It, you know, it's sometimes I ask you to watch a video or an audio or a meditation or something. And yes, you get to journal. And a lot of people don't like to journal, but they get to because then they keep track. And the type of journaling that I ask them to do is, okay, you don't like journaling? Then email me. Email me what you're going through. And when you're in the middle of, you know, you just want to strangle someone, or text me.
Yeah.
Because that alone interrupts the pattern. That alone empowers you to create a different pathway for you, right? It's opening up different door, whereas, okay, I'm just going to knock you. Like,
you know, there's a woman, I think probably in New York, that was a lawyer, and mm-hmm. she quit her job as a lawyer, and she became a listener. And
yeah.
she has clients that will come in, and she'll sit there and just listen to them.
Yes.
And then they have this overwhelming relief that they got that off their chest.
Off their chest.
For example, from what I learned, a fellow went in and just talked about his wife who had died from alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
And all he did was talk to this lawyer, who is now a listener, and tell her what a wonderful woman she was.
Mm-hmm.
And he felt like he released his spirit, and he now is comfortable with life because somebody listened to him talk about how great his wife was, although she died from alcoholism.
Right.
And so I relate that to you. Is some of the benefit that you provide is to be a good listener?
Oh, definitely. People need to feel heard. People need to feel seen. And people don't believe in themselves because they hear what they've been told all their life. So if you, I keep saying you, and I don't mean you. if a person was told, you're a piece of shit, you're a dumb shit, you're a good
can't
for nothing.
Can't say that word.
Oh, can't say that word. Sorry. But if, yeah, I'm a Tony Robbins trained coach. So I was like, ah. Okay. So when that is the programming that you listen to all your life, that kind of is the filter that you see the world too. So when people sit with me in that, I call it a sacred space. It's what I'm creating is a place where they can be just themselves and cry if they want to cry, release if they want to release, talk if they want to talk. But at the same time, too, it's deep listening, but then also there's courage moving forward. There's always that forward movement so that they're breaking out of the past, the prison of the past, so then they can create a new future, a new reality for them, and not just be in that victimized mode of thinking all the time. So that's great that deep listening, people need to be heard from a soul level. And you know, you talk about the text, you know, there's a lot of disconnection going on in this world right now, and connecting back to that where people feel valued and heard and worthy, people need to listen first. A lot of suicide, who are attempting suicide, when they are heard on a deep soul level, something shifts in them, and that they connect back to that life force energy, and they get sparked back into a new inspiration, a new way of being, because somebody cared enough to stop and say, how are you doing? And not just, you know, be in the hustle and bustle and that.
So do you ever have clients that are grief-stricken and you try to help them through their grieving period?
Yes, they don't come to me knowing that they're grief-stricken, though. But after, the presenting problem is not really what they're suffering through, so part of the work that I do is to go deep into the root cause of the suffering, of that internal conflict. And there's many of them who have had unprocessed grief from death of a loved one, death of a child, death of a wife from cancer, and they don't know. People come to me for money. Why am I not making as much money as I can? I'm doing everything that, you know, all the self-help books are telling me, or all this training and seminars are doing, and why is it that I can't break through that financial ceiling? It's because there's unresolved grief, unresolved emotions inside that's blocking their capability to generate and receive wealth. You know, so a client of mine, his wife died of cancer, and he has coped with it for a long time, and he thought he was over it. He thought he's forgiven himself. He thought, you know, everything's okay. And he actually was working for youth minister. He's ministering youth at a church. So he's great. He's got that, but he just couldn't break through. And he was also a coach. He just couldn't break through that financial ceiling. And upon talking with him, it is that grief. Deep down inside, he was still punishing himself for losing his wife, that he neglected his wife, that he, all sorts of stories that one used to hurt themselves, to, because without, it's like, I'm punishing myself, then my wife's life has meaning, then she didn't die in vain. And it's so distorted, and he doesn't know that he's doing that until he came into coaching with me until we unraveled everything that he was doing that was hurting him rather than it wasn't honoring his wife. Not at all. So from that, work with me, he was able to piece his life back together and really come into a way that's honoring his wife, honoring himself, honoring the children, and creating a legacy and impacting his community that he was working on. So it's really a win-win-win-win formula.
Kind of an awakening.
Yes, and that's an awakening.
You know, as you were speaking there, one of the things that I remember as a young boy and I was raised Catholic, and we had a confessional.
Mm-hmm.
And the opportunity to, on Saturday night, go in and cleanse your soul and confess to your sins.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd go in there and remember the Ten Commandments. Did I do this, do that, do this? And it had some effect. On, I think, people like myself and others that went to confession, that you got it off your soul, got it off your shoulders.
Right.
So that forgiveness is important, but there's a little pain, too, because you got a punishment of reciting some prayers, etc. So what you do is almost kind of like what a priest does in a confessional.
Yes, I've been told that too. It's like going to confession and releasing and having that cleansing in a way that is non-judgmental and, you know, in a way that brings people back to what Catholic teaching is actually, the highest form of the teaching, not the where the distortions are too, because it's all based on people's interpretation and that, and sometimes their wrong interpretation get passed on to the church goer. I was also a Catholic, raised Catholic, went to Catholic school. I sent my kids to Catholic school, believing in what Catholic teaching is. You know, and it is really the same thing as any other religion. It's really love, right? Love in the highest form. And there's something about admitting to your humanity, right? And being heard. It's so cleansing. It's that feeling heard. And the one thing that I do that I didn't myself experience in Catholic upbringing is that reclaiming the spirit, reclaiming the innocence. You know, it's not about, it's like reframing what sinfulness is. Osho said, sin is missing the mark. So when we are out of alignment, and again, I'm going back to that accounting of the general, the ledger of life, when it's out of alignment, when it's not reconciled, we actually feel it. There's a certain discomfort, there's a certain dissonance happening inside, because we're vibrational beings, we're energetic beings, right? So we can feel that the energy is off. So from confession, it's not just an unloading. Or I call it a vomit diary. You know, you just vomit it all out. But there's also a reckoning. There's also a reconciliation. And there's a moving forward. There's, okay, now what? Now you're awake. Now you're conscious of what you're doing. Now what? What do you want to do? What do you want to create?
You know, I had a guest here, I think it was last week. And one of the things that she did was help people unscramble their garages or their houses and get things organized, to go into a lawyer's office and see everything spread all over and
mm-hmm.
get it organized. And do you do that type of thing too, where people have to get their life organized and, you know, put things where they belong and tidy up, I guess. And they, just like, you know, if you work real hard one day, it's just like stepping in the shower and cleansing yourself.
Right.
Well, by keeping your desk clean or your house clean or your garage clean or your business workplace clean when it has been messy,
yes,
is like taking a shower. Things are just so much better.
Yes.
Is that a good analogy?
That is a really great analogy. And I would refer someone to an organizer like that. And actually, one of the speakers for Beyond Grief is Feng Shui and Elemental Master Su Yun Ko. She helps people organize what they inherited from a loved one. And sometimes people hoard things and,
yeah,
you know, and then they all cluttered up. And the clutter really is a reflection of what's going on inside. So for me, for my work, I unclutter from within, and from within is without. Like, you know, as above, so below, as within, so without. So I start the process from within, and then things click in. Like my personal story of I couldn't get any, I was stuck. I couldn't get any work done. And because I was stuck, my exterior started becoming chaotic and I couldn't keep up anymore. I couldn't manage because I couldn't manage the thoughts in my head. I couldn't manage my emotion and everything got piled up and piled up and I couldn't keep up anymore. And so next thing I know, I was in this spiral downward motion into crazy. Real crazy. And so that's where my work comes in, is from the inside out. And Su Yun Ko, she approaches her work like your guest, you know, from the exterior, because at least when the external is in order, then a person can breathe. I know a client of mine can't work if her desk is not organized. But then that's a belief structure too. What if you can work? You know, don't let that be a limit to what you can do. Otherwise, you know, nothing gets done. You know, you're just cleaning and cleaning and cleaning. Oh, okay. Then, oh, it's 5 o'clock. Time to cook dinner.
Yeah. Well, it is 15 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. And my guest this morning is Tess Vergara, strategic interventionist and awakening coach, Courage and Vision Moving Forward. And they're having a big seminar in Bloomington on Sunday, May 20th. And Open Heart Mind Coaching presents. And you are one of the featured speakers there. And we talk now about you and your business, and I'm going to take a real brief break. And when we come back, I want to get to know you.
Okay.
Now, I hope you remember, or I hope you understand what the format is, and that is, where were you born, and then go from there.
I'm excited.
Go through life. All right, Tess?
All right.
All right. My guest this morning, Tess Vergara, will be back in just a moment on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Stay tuned. I think you'll enjoy Tess's story.
Take a short drive to Delicious to the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison. Open Tuesday through Sunday, the Fireside is just a short 10-minute drive from Northfield. Today is Tap Tuesday at the Fireside. Your choice of any of 10 different tap beers, just $3. There are burger specials, the expanded pasta menu, plus kids eat for just $3 every Tuesday so you can bring the whole family. The Fireside now opens at 3 p.m. on Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Wednesday through Saturday, and remember, weekend breakfast begins 9 a.m. on Sundays. So take the short drive to Delicious and enjoy Tap Tuesday at the Fireside Lounge and Supper Club in Denison.
Denison, 14 minutes, by the way, before 10 o'clock on KYMN Radio, a friend you can count on. And my guest this morning is Tess Vergara, and she, like many of my guests, has her smartphone out, and she also brought in a laptop, and I got to talk about that. You had it open. I don't know what you had on your laptop. I couldn't see the screen, but guess what? Guess what? Guess. Go ahead. Okay, you. My wife needed a new laptop.
Uh-huh.
And so we went shopping for one,
uh-huh,
and she needs one that does everything, you know, pictures and yes. whatever. I'm just totally uneducated when it comes to that. But, Wayne, you need a new computer, don't you? And I said, yeah, mine's frozen, you know, the tower and the screen and my desk is cluttered.
Yes.
And the stuff is, like she said to the service person where we were shopping, you know, are you going to keep this under all your papers or on in a neat way? She bought me a laptop.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, that's awfully, guess what? It was like $199, $200.
Oh, wow.
Because all I want to be able to do is email.
Email.
YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
What's that other one? Google.
Yes.
And be able to write a letter and keep it mm-hmm. and print it out and keep notes on something. That's right. All I want to do.
Yes.
And I was shocked that I could have a nice laptop about the size of the one you're carrying.
Uh-huh.
I'm sure you paid more than $199 for that.
Paid a lot of money for this laptop.
Yeah. Well, Tess, let's get to know you, all right?
Okay.
Vergara, is that a maiden name or a married name?
That is my maiden name, yes.
Okay,
yes.
What, Vergara, what does that stem from, Vergara? I haven't seen that name before.
Oh, okay. So I'm from the Philippines.
You are?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes. And so our last name tends to sound Hispanic or Spanish because we were under Spanish colony for hundreds of years back in the 1800s. I'm sorry. I'm not a history person, but yeah, my friends who are Filipino, you know, probably, Tess, you don't know your history.
Is there a town in the Philippines that you came from?
I grew up in Manila.
Well, that's a popular name.
That's
Manila.
A popular name.
Okay.
My parents were from the province. My dad was from Ilocos, and my mom from Tuguegarao, Cagayan. And they met in Manila, and that's, you know, where they had us.
Isn't there a song
children.
That has a name Manila in it?
Manila, Manila.
Yeah. Okay, all right, thank you. Now, years ago, there were like five Filipino women that came to America to study our culture.
Oh.
And they went from, some were teachers, doctors, bartenders, tourist people, and I hosted, my wife and I hosted one of the ladies, and then I took all of them to a Minnesota Twins game.
Oh, nice.
And I was doing some MC work just before the game, and they asked, some of the folks listening know this story, but they asked if I would have these five women come out during the national anthem.
Oh.
And then during the seventh inning stretch, they had them singing, take me out to the ball, you know. So I have a little connection to Philippines. Now, it takes forever to get there, doesn't it?
Yeah. I can't remember how long it took me. Well, I came from Vancouver at that time. It was a direct flight. So, or was it a direct flight? Did we stop in Tokyo? Oh, my God. The last time I was in the Philippines was actually 1990, for the death of my father. I haven't been back since.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Do you miss it?
Yes. And my family is all here in North America.
Oh.
So there's no urgency to go back, I guess. My kids have always wanted to go back. And I was a single mom for 15 years. So I kept promising, next year, or maybe in 2 years. So,
yeah.
Yeah, and my daughter finally went by herself just before. She took a gap year, and one of the places she visited is the Philippines. And she also went to Tokyo, and she was in Hawaii with me for a while.
How old were you when you escaped?
Escaped?
The
yeah, I was 19.
Oh, so okay, that's good. I want to hear about things. Is it true then that the Philippines do not have a middle class? Either you're rich or you're poor?
Yeah, something like that. And that's why my parents wanted us to come here to North America where we can at least be, you know, better than...
You could be middle class.
Middle class,
because
yeah.
What did your father do in the Philippines?
He was an accountant, actually.
Oh, he was? Okay. Yeah. And for the government or for private industry?
For the government.
Okay, so he's a government employee, an accountant.
Yes.
Now, wouldn't that be a pretty good job in the Philippines?
It would be, but still not enough if he is sending his kids to private school.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was very ambitious for us, and all he wanted for us was to have our education, because he believed, both my parents believed, that with education we can conquer the world.
Did your mother work?
Yes, she stopped at a certain point of time.
Okay. Yeah. Did you grow up from the time you were born to you were 19, did you live in the same house?
Yes.
You did, okay.
Yes.
Describe it for me. I'm a nosy guy.
Okay.
And I love to learn about other cultures. So describe the house you lived in.
It was a two-story. So when you come, the street is, you know, would be sometimes quiet, sometimes not. People would be, the kids would be playing basketball. There would be a hoop, you know, a basketball
uh-huh.
hoop, you know, by the sidewalk there. And so it's noisy with kids in the morning, but at nighttime, there would be people drinking,
okay.
right, in the street. And we're known for that. We're very laid back and happy people. So when you come upstairs, it's very steep going up the stairs, and there's another family down. So I guess it would be like equivalent to a townhome here.
Okay.
So the setup, but we don't have parking garages or anything. So we park in the street. We didn't have a vehicle. My dad had a motorcycle that he would bring into the landing of the stairs. So you'd walk up the stairs. And my father built this extension so that for the kitchen, that, which was our dining room. That's what you'd see right away. And before it became a dining room, it was like this window here. There's a ledge like that.
Uh-huh.
And you can see the roof, and it used to be a, he had doves. And some chicken.
Okay.
And, you know, and we would have eggs. Oh, my God, I'm remembering so many things.
Isn't it fun?
It is fun. And I actually was, I must have been 2 years old. I was rolling around in a can of floor wax, like your coffee cup, but, you know, I was just doing this motion, and I fell, and I think that that's may have been why. You know, I saw a neurologist just recently, just to see, you know, my balance, left and right brain, and it was just funny how one impact like that can affect you your entire life, and you don't even know it.
that happened to me in a motorcycle accident.
Yeah, it's something gets impacted there. But yeah, I must have been too. So I fell off, and my memory hasn't been I have problem with details and such. That's why
I will bring out some good memories.
I know.
I'm gonna take a final break this hour. We'll be right back with our guest on Kim Radio, Tess Vergara from the Philippines.
You thought you could make a midnight run to the store for a loaf of bread. What you got was a minor fender bender instead. I'm State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell in Northfield, and I know that accidents can happen anytime. That's why we give you 24-hour good neighbor service, so night or day, help is just a phone call away. For your insurance and financial needs, phone me, State Farm Agent Mark Quinnell, at 645-4545.
Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
It is 3.5 minutes before 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio, streaming at kymnradio.net. Tess Figuera is my guest this morning, and she will be lecturing on Sunday in Bloomington on Beyond Grief, Reclaim Your Spirit. We talked a lot about that. Tess is from the Philippines, Manila. And how close were your neighbors in regards to the house you lived in?
Oh, it's a plywood away.
It's a what?
Plywood away.
Oh, so right next to each other.
Right next to each other, okay. On top of each other, yeah.
What was the main meals that your mother would prepare for you as a young child?
Pandesal, some hot dogs, or tocino, longanisa.
Can you tell us what those are?
I'll try. Longanisa is, it looks like a sausage, but it's sweetened. It's
a sweet sausage.
That's sweet sausage.
Okay.
Yeah.
What
like
is
a chorizo.
Like a what?
Chorizo.
What's a chorizo?
I thought that's more familiar. Well, it's sweetened anyway. It's made of pork.
Okay.
I guess.
Did you had eggs then from the chicken?
Eggs.
And then you ate the chickens?
Yeah, from the chicken. And yeah, oh my God. I saw my mom actually hold the chicken from its neck and blood.
Oh yeah. I've seen that myself.
Yeah.
And not too many people nowadays see that happening.
No.
There are a few people around town though that I know that do have chickens and their eggs are delicious.
Yeah.
They're range-fed or whatever that's called.
Yeah.
So how many brothers and sisters do you have?
There's four of us girls and two brothers. So
okay,
total of six.
Who's the oldest of your brothers and sisters?
Our oldest, her name is Lou, Lourdes.
Lou?
Yeah.
Okay. And how much older than you is Lou?
A lot.
A lot.
Uh-huh.
Are we talking 10? 15?
No, yeah, she's 17 years.
Wow. Who was after Lou?
Virgilio. We call him Billy.
Billy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Billy the goat.
How much older was he than you?
I guess 15 or 16.
Okay. And then after Billy?
Charito.
Oh, what's the short name for Charito?
Charito Cheat. C-H-I-T. Chit-chat.
Chits.
Chit.
Cheats. Okay.
And
how much older is Chits?
She's going to kill me. She's 10 years older than
10.
Me.
Then after Cheats?
That would be Elizabeth or Beth.
Beth, okay. And how much older is Beth than you?
She is 3 years older.
Oh, okay. And then you?
Myself, yeah. I'm the baby girl. And then a younger brother, Alberto, named after my dad, Albert.
Albert. Okay. So you're between Beth and Albert?
Yes.
Okay.
And
how much younger is...
5 years apart.
Okay. He's 5 years younger. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I like to know these things as we chit-chat. We have to take a break for the news. It's 10 o'clock. My guest this morning is Tess Figuera, and we will be back with Tess right after the news next on the Wayne Eddy Affair on the 195.1 FM. And in September, 50 years serving the Northfield community at 1080 on the AM dial.
Unrest. Florida school on lockdown. I'm John Trout. Another day of protest by Palestinians on the Gaza Strip. 60 have died in recent confrontations with Israeli police. The unrest triggered by the relocation of the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem. Correspondent Nick Robertson.
It is also going to be a day of mourning for the Palestinians. The Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has ordered a day of mourning, has ordered for flags to be flown at half staff.
A school in Miami is on lockdown after reports of shots fired in the area. Responding officers could be seen rushing kids into Brownsville Middle School as they search for a potential suspect. Police are converging at a nearby apartment complex with their weapons drawn. No injuries have been reported. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross says the administration is exploring additional remedies to its harsh punishment of a Chinese smartphone maker. The U.S. has blocked ZTE from buying parts. Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff claims claims President Trump's dealings with China is motivated by nepotism.
Early on, the president considered doing away with one China policy, something very important to China. Now, he later abandoned that, and when he abandoned that, magically, mysteriously, China gave the Ivanka brand trademarks that it had long sought.
Afternoon thunderstorms are forecast for the Northeast today. In the South, a disturbance in the Gulf of Mexico has the attention of many meteorologists and correspondent Clayton Neville.
Up to 6 inches of rain and isolated higher amounts could fall over South Florida and into southeastern states by the end of the work week.
The National Hurricane Center shows just a 10% chance that the system would become a tropical cyclone. Hedge fund owner David Tepper has agreed to buy the Carolina Panthers. It's an NFL record, $2.2 billion. Tepper would become just the second owner in team history. On Wall Street, the Dow is down 200 points. I'm John Trout.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station, 1080 on your AM dial, and the 95.1 FM, and, of course, streaming at kymnradio.net. Tessa Vergara, I hope I said that right, is my guest this morning, and she originally came here from the Philippines, and I got a question stewing here that I just got to ask, and I'm not going to remember the name. I'm going to write it down just in case I actually do remember the name. Tell me about the lady in the shoes.
Imelda.
Okay, I got Matilda. It's Imelda.
Imelda Marcus.
Now, that was, were you there at that time?
Yes, I was. That was 19, I remember being in the People Power Revolution in... I forgot the place, though. But that was my birthday when the People Power collected in this one. Oh, where was the EDSA? We were in EDSA. And I'm not a very political person, or I usually don't. Yeah, but that was a very pivotal moment.
Well, tell me about it, because we here in the United States, all I remember is that they dethroned the couple, and that she was more of in strength than he was, and that she had 1,000 pair of shoes or whatever the ridiculous number is, and that that people got upset on that in regards to when you were on your birthday. What was your birthday? Or is?
That was February 25.
Okay, so what did you guys do on February 25th when you say People Power?
We were marching.
Yeah.
It's like the people speaking up, like, no more of this, no more of, no more to not knowing or being lied to or being, so many things like that.
What were they doing to the country? Were they robbing and stealing?
That's what they say. You know, you hear different stories from different segments of society,
well,
right?
Well, tell me a story.
Well, if it was my father you're talking to, he is very Marcus. He was pro Marcus, you know. So the couple did a lot of great things for the country, and but then people are saying they stole things or they. So I really don't know, you know, what side to listen to as an awakening coach. You know, it's. I go deeper than that, not the surface, right? So that they stole, that they had someone killed, Ninoy Aquino, or Ninoy Aquino.
Who was he?
Ninoy Aquino was his rival. I guess there was a threat that he was going to step into power, and he got killed on the tarmac of the airport.
Okay, I remember that now.
Yeah, so that airport had been... named Ninoy Aquino International Airport, and I think it's been changed now. So I'm not...
He was assassinated.
He was assassinated.
Was anybody held responsible?
The couple got ousted out of the Philippines, right? So, but I think now they're back. Yeah, well, the Imelda is back. So, yeah, let's not talk politics.
To me, I'm not interpreting it as politics.
Right.
I'm interpreting as history.
Right.
Now, the Philippines islands are... You know,
scattered islands.
Scattered, and you know, the United States had a big involvement in
yes.
regards to the Second World War.
Correct.
And the horrible, horrible things that went on
mm-hmm.
by the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, so I'm not talking politics.
Yeah.
I am talking history. What happened and how do you feel? I mean, when you have a country, a large group of many, many people on your birthday saying get out in
yeah.
regards to Imelda and what was his name?
Marcos, Ferdinand.
Ferdinand Marcos, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like Black Lives Matter here in the United
exactly.
States.
It's
so I want to get a cultural
mm-hmm.
interpretation of what you were doing. And what birthday was it?
I was 19, so I was 17, I guess.
Okay,
when
17.
We marched. Was that 1983 or 86? Now, you're really making me think
well,
back.
It doesn't matter. just that you were old enough to participate and remember.
Okay, so no, I graduated high school in 1983, so that must have been 1986.
Okay.
When that happened, the People Power Movement. But the gist of that was people found their voices to speak up to, because now, you know, I'm hearing different sides of the story, but at that moment, so I'm just going to speak from that moment, is like people were tired of being lied to, of being manipulated, and so they spoke up and they marched, and it was an amazing peaceful protest too, you know, no one died or no one, it was a very peaceful but very strong presence of the people power.
How far from where you lived was the sea? The ocean or the Gulf or whatever, you were you near the water?
Yeah, very far.
I mean, there's, you know, so many islands and
right,
peninsulas.
Yeah, we would take the bus to go to the beach, or it would be an excursion. It would be a couple of hours or
okay.
an hour. There's a Manila Bay, of course. You're speaking to someone who was very protected, though, so I was not allowed to venture out by myself. So at 19, I hardly saw the Philippines on my own because I was not allowed to go out and not allowed to do things. So pretty much a good girl and didn't.
Well, what about Lou and Billy and Chits? They were all much older than you.
Mm-hmm.
Did they go off on their own? Or
yes, they did. Yeah, my sister Lou, she was gone for a while. She was in Laguna. She lived in Laguna. Billy went to Saudi Arabia. She ended up going to Japan, and she still is in Japan. She became the breadwinner at some point in time. My father lost his job, or not lost. He got something happened that my sister at 17 had to step up and sang. She's a vocal artist,
really,
jazz singer. She's got her own following around the world.
Wow.
So she's got a name for herself, Charito, charito.com there.
So you can do that at the end of the show too. Did she help the family then?
She helped the family. She became the family breadwinner. And then after a few months, and this is why my mother stopped working to chaperone her in cities. I was 10 at that time.
Yeah.
And
So mom went with your sister.
Mom went
Lou.
From city. Cheat.
Oh, Cheats. Okay.
Went from city to city singing, and she won a big contest that took her to Tokyo as part of her prize. So she won a 6-month contract to sing in Japan, and then that's where she met my brother-in-law. And now they have, you know, she's never come back.
Did you ever get to go to any of her appearances?
Oh, yes, yes. There was a time that I was following her. She was singing in New York, in Atlanta. I even sponsored her to have a concert in Winnipeg. And she sang a few times in Vancouver. So every time there was... and in L.A. too. I was in L.A. with her when she did a recording. And I was also one of her backup singers.
You were.
Cool. Yeah.
What is the language of the Philippines?
Filipino or Tagalog is the official language. But we have many different dialects. Like my father, he spoke Ilocano, and my mom spoke... what did my mom... I'm having a.
I understand. Yeah. But so you're saying, for example, somebody that is from International Falls, Minnesota, that goes to Dallas, Texas,
yeah.
or Houston, or whatever, we speak English, but there may be different dialects. You know,
different
a southern
dialects.
Accent, for example.
No, it's totally different.
Totally different.
Totally different.
It's like that in China too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you do when you're in a big city like Manila and there's 2-3 different languages?
Well, sometimes it's, you know, depending on the mindset of the people, it can be something that, hey, teach me how to speak. I'm bothered that I can't remember my mother's dialect.
Yeah.
One is Itawi. She spoke different... dialects, and she spoke very good Ilocano too, and that's how they spoke. My mom and dad spoke Ilocano when they're discussing something to keep the children out of their business.
Okay. our family did Pig Latin. Ude uye one igpe etenle. So when you were growing up, you went to a private school?
Yes.
Okay. And I assume it was a Catholic school?
Yes.
Did you wear a uniform?
Yes.
And how many years did you go through? Was it like first through 12th? Or what is their educational system in Manila, the Philippines?
Yes, the educational system in the Philippines is based on American, actually. So there's kindergarten, and then there's... grades 1 to 6.
Okay.
And then the 4 years of high school. So, but here it's up to 12th grade.
Right.
But that, you know.
What were there languages that you had to learn when you were going through this process of education?
Well, in college, I had to learn Spanish.
Spanish, okay.
I had to take 3 units of Spanish every semester at the University of Santo Tomas.
Now, do you still have the ability to speak your mother language?
Oh, totally.
Okay, well, let's do this. so I can see the rhythm of it or whatever. Let's tell our listeners today what a beautiful day today is and what you're looking forward to do in your life. And I'll see how much I can identify what you're saying by watching you say it and listening. So describe the day and what you want to do with your life.
But, okay, in my language.
In your language.
Okay. Magandang umaga, mga taga pakinig. Ang ganda ng araw ngayon, ang malakas ang sikat ng araw. At ako ay uh,
Oh, my goodness. It's hard. Ako ay nangangarap at nag-aanyaya sa mga nakikinig na sana ay kayo ay lubos na naliligayahan sa aking pakikipagpanayam with Wayne Eddy here at the Wayne Eddy Affairs, at naliligayahan sa aming pag-uusap.
All right, here's what she said, folks. Oh, it's a beautiful day today. The sun is bright and shining. And what I want to do with my life is, well, I want to continue the profession I'm in. Right now I'm talking to Wayne Eddy on the Wayne Eddy Affair, and we're enjoying our conversation. That's what I got
good.
Out of it.
Very good.
A lot of in there.
I know, right? No. It's whether it's English or Filipino, I'm like,
Well, okay, I thought that was a word.
No, okay. It was me pausing and translating back. Oh, my goodness. When I'm with my family, it's like a whole different part of me just gets triggered, and it's the whole dynamic gets reborn again. So it's the same banter, the same, okay, this and that.
Rhythm, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they would like, are you sure you're an awakening coach? Because you're still your old self. But it's, you know, just being myself wherever, whomever I'm with.
Well, you know, being Filipino and from the Philippines, I assume that you're proud of your heritage.
Yes.
But the negative things about what goes on in Filipino is something that most people hear about. They don't hear about the cultural things, the art centers or whatever. They yeah. hear about, what do they call that? The sex industry.
Yes.
You hear about that on the news quite mm-hmm. a bit. And in Philippine, and also being trafficked, that's the word I'm looking mm-hmm, for, mm-hmm. in the United States and in Spain mm-hmm. and other places. Is that a prominent thing in the Philippines to keep the people informed about what's going on in that business by way of radio, television, or newspaper? Are there watchdogs that, you know what I mean when I say watchdog, don't you? No? You know what a watchdog is?
I know what a watchdog is, yeah.
You know, for a house?
Uh-huh.
Well, they call people that keep their eye on things, like that. The people that you were marching with on your birthday
uh-huh.
are watchdogs of peace and love, okay?
Right.
So,
uh-huh. okay.
The Philippines are known for their sex trafficking.
Yes.
Are the people informed in the Philippines about that as much as they are here in America and other countries in regards to news?
I would like to believe so. I would like to believe that the internet has so much impact on people and how they're thinking. And so I would like to elevate the consciousness that in my heart, I hope that there's this awareness that, you know, to get people out of that very situation that gets them to be, you know, in that victim, how they got into the traffic. So I guess what I'm saying is I believe in the higher order of things, where people are knowing in the back of their mind that this is a situation that we need to take action on, and there's a whole revolution going on right now as far as global consciousness awakening, and people are waking up every minute, every hour, every breath, right? So on the surface, it might look like, okay, this is what's happening. It's very sordid. It's a very tragic
you know, it's such a tragedy for people to be sold and be trafficked elsewhere. But there's also an underground or higher ground that's happening to correct that situation.
Okay, that's good explanation.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk about the cultural things that you remember as a young girl growing up to age 19 and coming to the U.S. or Canada.
Mm-hmm.
Did you go to, like, movies? Did you have good television? What about museums and other playgrounds and swimming pools? Or was it just a close-knit family living 2 feet away from another close-knit family?
Yeah, I was about to describe that earlier. So as you walk up the stairs, you'll see the TV, a big TV, black and... did we go in color? I'm remembering the black and white TV.
Okay.
I think we had a smaller TV that my sister brought from Tokyo that is colored, and everything, all the technology then came from my sister. You know, she would send packages or bring it with her to upgrade the family. And then we would be the, in our street, we would be the one with the gadgets.
Yep.
With it's the old versions of Nintendo. As far as TV, my older brother got first dibs on it. If I touch the channel, I get whacked.
Okay.
Or get away.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch the basketball or something.
Yeah.
Movies and such, there were a lot of things happening that we were not exposed to. One, because my parents believed in limiting our exposure to keep us safe. Two, there was money to, you know, there was not a whole lot of money to go to the theater.
Yeah.
If I wanted to have a soda for my lunch, I'm going to have to walk to school.
I get it.
And not use the bus money or the we call it jeepney, not use the transportation fare. And, you know, I would walk to the university and back.
Okay.
For lunch.
How long, how far away was it?
Oh, maybe a half hour walk.
Oh.
Not too bad.
Good exercise.
Yes.
Now, you said that on two occasions now you suggested that your parents kept you close to home to protect you. What was their worry? What were they worried about if you went out and about in Manila?
That I'll be raped, I'll be kidnapped, I'll be taken hostage, you know.
Was that a common thing?
Well, yes. And no, so there's many things, I guess. I was the youngest girl in the family. We were all subject to the same rigidity, but my sister Beth managed to escape and play with the neighbors and sneak back in the house. And, well, she got punished. I didn't.
Okay. When you snuck out, they didn't catch you, huh?
Well, I didn't. I really didn't
sneak
out. Like, why didn't I?
So what? It's 26 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Tess Figuera, life coach, is with me right now. And she's originally from the Philippines until she was 19 years old. Your education at this Catholic grade school, high school, what was the name of the school?
Espiritu Santo Parochial School. ESPS.
Parochial. Parochial. So your further education was where?
University of Santo Tomas, where I took accounting.
University of what?
Santo Tomas.
Santo Tomas.
Like St. Thomas.
St. Thomas, yeah. And where was that located?
Santa Cruz, Manila.
Okay. How far was that from home?
Yeah, half hour.
Walk. Okay.
Yeah, so 10 minutes.
What was your choice when you spent your bus money on soda?
Oh, that would be Coke.
Coca-Cola? The real thing?
The real thing. Yeah, you know, the bottle of Coke?
Yes.
The sexy bottle like that. And they would put it on a plastic bag with a straw in it.
Oh.
That would be my treat for the day.
What was the weather like on an annual basis?
Oh,
The weather didn't bother me growing up, but when I went back there, it was like I had to take 3 showers. So my perception has changed since living here in North America. It was fine. And I remember being very skinny because the sun would, would create a sweat and it would literally drip. And we would have handkerchief to wipe the sweat.
Yeah.
Because, very hot.
Is there a costume that women wear in the Philippines like they do in Hawaii?
Yes, there's a costume, but we wear it. I didn't wear it while I was there. My mom and dad did on special occasions, the Barong Tagalog. So if there's a wedding or a baptism, and the Filipinos here actually carried that tradition or custom of wearing the Filipino pride, Barong Tagalog. It's really nice.
So did you feel like you left or escaped the Philippines?
Oh, I was taken.
What does that mean?
Well, I would have wanted to stay longer, especially when my father came back. So that's why in 1990 I had to go back for my father's funeral. I wish when he went back to the Philippines, I also went back with him. And to come here with my own choice rather than as part of the package. I was, when we got the application in, I guess I was 16, 17. It took many years for it to get approved. So I was already 19 when it got approved. And, at 19, I was like, I want to see the Philippines, or I want to have a job here. I wanted to kind of prove to myself that I could do it, that I could experience that kind of living and then choose to be here if I wanted to.
What are funerals like?
Oh, the funerals are different here. Here we use
coffin.
Yes, a coffin. But there's a third party that houses the...
Oh, your funeral homes.
A funeral home that houses the coffin, and they arrange the visits,
yes.
Right? In the Philippines, it can be in your house. It can be somewhere in my father... actually, the place that he worked in, they hosted his body and us, too. For several days.
Was it was your father in a coffin, or was it?
Yeah, in a coffin.
Okay, all right. Because some people just start on a.
Yeah, no, he was in a coffin. I think there was a glass. You could have it open or with a glass. So he had glass on him. You could see him, and we had a vigil for him for like maybe 5 days.
Oh wow.
We waited for, because we were all here already, so we waited for every family member to be able to come to travel to the Philippines and be there for the wake. So it took longer.
Do they bury or do they cremate or both?
Traditionally, people would like, especially in Catholic faith, they would like to be buried, but my father specifically wanted to be cremated.
Okay. I was just wondering if the land mass would hold... A cemetery, like in New Orleans, they have to use concrete to keep everything in place because of flooding, etc.
Right. I think families buy their plots of land,
okay,
and bury there.
Okay.
In our case, we brought my father's ashes back with us.
Is there a monsoon season?
Oh, yes. Every summer.
what is that like?
What is that like? It's like the street that I talked to you about. It can go up to here with flooding. No, well, up to here.
Okay. That's about 4 feet. Okay.
Yeah. And sometimes, I can't go to school. I can't go, right.
Okay.
It can go very high and create a lot of damage. And I would remember, just a simple rain, I would have to wear rain boots or have someone wait for me at the corner and bring me my shoes. So we had a help. You'd call her nanny here.
But she lived with us. She was practically part of the family. And she would be at the corner of the street and, you know,
hand
with
you
the umbrella and with the shoes.
Do you have hurricanes?
No.
Oh. Okay.
I don't believe so.
Did your dad ever talk about the Second World War? He might have been a child at that time.
Second World War. He talked about his father when my sister married Japanese. He was a little resentful in the beginning.
Oh, sure.
Because his father got killed by Japanese.
Yeah, it was terrible what the Japanese did. Yeah. But MacArthur saved everybody. It's 1032 on 1080 Radio, KYMN out of Northfield, Minnesota. You're listening to the Wayne Eddy Affair on 1080 AM, or you're listening on 95.1 FM, The One, or you're listening to us by way of streaming at kymnradio.net. I'll be back with my guest, Tess Vergara, in just a moment.
Rice County Steam and Gas Engines is hosting their 8th annual Armed Forces Day celebration on Saturday and Sunday, May 19th and 20th, starting at 10 a.m. each day. The day will include military reenactments, World War II themed battles, Civil War artillery, weapons demonstrations, military vehicles, plus many more activities for your entertainment. A military swap meet plus food and drink concessions will be available for purchases. Starting May 19th, head 3 miles south of Dundas to the Rice County Steam and Gas Engines grounds for an Armed Forces Day celebration.
And that is a nice ground to have celebrations. It's just beautiful out there. All right, let's get back to our conversation with Tess Vergara. Tess, you came to Canada first?
Yes.
At age 19?
Yes.
With the family? Or
with the whole family.
Okay. And why Canada?
Because, there's a whole story.
Well, that's
that.
What we're here for.
My mother wrote letters to my then future brother-in-law, courting him to court my sister.
Okay, arranged.
Yeah, arranged, yes, but they fell in love. But it was my mother who corresponded in the beginning. And he was the cousin of my mom's niece. So he is married to... no, his brother is married to my cousin, in other words.
Okay.
So my mom and him communicated on behalf of my sister.
Which sister was it?
Lou.
Lou, okay.
Yeah. And, it was a few... My sister, because she was a nurse, could have gone to the States. But again, you know, we're talking about protection, safety, and that would have been my mom's... My mom would feel a lot better if my sister knew somebody and, you know, it's like entrusting her with a nice guy, you know, who can take responsibility for her. Yeah.
Was it Vancouver that you lived
no,
in?
No, Winnipeg.
Winnipeg.
Winterpeg.
Yeah. How long did you live in Winnipeg?
I was there for 7 years.
7 years.
Yeah.
And what type of a job were you able to get with your education?
Oh, with my education, I started as a drapery cutter because no one hired anyone there, right? And then I got tired of that. I took a job at lunchtime at Burger King until I could get an office job, any office job. And because with my education in Canada, this is, if I went straight to the States, all my credits would have been counted. But I was given the equivalent of a high school graduate under the Canadian system,
okay,
which sucked, especially for my sister who had pre-med, and that was all wiped out according to the Canadian standards.
Okay.
So, and I thought, okay, if she suffered that much, I had nothing to complain about, you know, considering. So I took a job as a cashier at Burger King.
Hold the pickles, hold the lettuce. Special orders don't upset us. All you have to do is let us have it your way.
That's amazing.
Is that where?
Is that Burger King? I don't know.
I think so.
But I was like,
so what happened after Burger King?
After Burger King, I was taking a typing test at one of the community, or maybe it was a government thing that, you know, if you're looking for a job, they provide training. And then somebody noticed my skills and they said, you don't need another training. You just need a job.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm trying to get a job, but no one would hire me without previous experience. So he arranged for something, and something happened. And
what was it that happened?
I got hired as a bookkeeper.
A bookkeeper?
Yeah.
So for a large company? Or
for a large company. It's called... my memory.
So how long did you stay there?
I was there for a while. I was there for a while, but I kept going up in stage. So I started as a reconciliation clerk. Maybe just a couple of years. But they were also paying for my designation, which was Certified General Accountant in Canada. So I started getting taking correspondence course in accounting, and they were paying for it. So as I get more credits, they gave me a different position.
And more money.
And more money.
Yeah.
James Richardson's and Sons.
That's
where I used to
and
work.
Son.
It was the highest building in Winnipeg, I remember.
Winnipeg. Tessa Vergara is my guest this morning, and she'll be lecturing on Sunday up in Bloomington on Beyond Grief is the title of the program. There'll be several speakers. Tess, when did you come to the United States?
Ooh, that was July 4th of 1996.
Oh, isn't that cute? July 4th.
Yeah.
220 years after the company or the country was made into a country.
Oh, 1996?
You came here in 1996.
Yes.
Well, 1776 is when we started.
Oh, wow.
So.
Awesome.
But
great math.
And how come? Why did you come to the States?
My then husband, the internet was new at that time, so he submitted a resume, blah, 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 and he wanted for our kids, he believed that U.S. has more opportunities for our kids and for us too than in Canada. So he worked hard to get a job here, and... that's what happened.
Kind of a job did he get?
He was doing computer programming.
Oh, so yeah. He was an IT guy.
Was an
at
IT
the beginning.
Guy. Yeah,
but that's probably good money.
Was pretty good money. Unfortunately, that marriage lasted. When we got here, it was a few
months.
Where
did you go when you came to America?
Edina.
Edina. Okay. How many children do you and your ex-husband have?
Two. I was pregnant with the second when we...
What's the first one? What's her or his name?
Her name is Amanda.
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 I like that. Amanda. And how old is Amanda?
Amanda now is 1994. Yeah, 24.
Okay. 24?
Yeah.
And then you were pregnant with who?
Pregnant with Margaret.
Margaret.
In 1996,
okay.
Yeah. So she's 22.
And where did they live?
Margaret is in Virginia right now.
In where?
Virginia.
Okay.
She's at Virginia Commons, taking art school.
Okay. She pretty good?
She's pretty good in arts, and I was one of those parents who said, don't go into arts, you'll not make money, but
she's following her heart and her being. What is Amanda up to?
Amanda, she actually graduated nearby at St. Olaf.
Amanda graduated from St. Olaf?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
She double majored in Spanish and... social work.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you hear of St. Olaf?
A good friend of ours, their son went to St. Olaf. And we visited the school, and it was, comfortable. It was small enough, but yet gave her a little bit of independence so she can spread her wings.
Do you recall which year she graduated?
She graduated last year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Did you come to the graduation?
No.
Oh, what did Amanda think of that?
Well, not a Not a good thing.
Okay. Well, I don't want to get into anything personal. We'll just jump over that, all right? So you landed in Edina with your ex-husband, and now are you an American citizen?
No? Yes. Okay. Yes.
What did you have to go through to become an American citizen?
Funny you ask that. From almost being deported, I became deportable a few months after my husband and I separated, you know, in 1997. You know, it was, I don't know how much you want to hear into this
story. Well, yeah, we got a lot of conversation going on in America about immigration.
Yeah, so how I got, there's no bypassing my mind where it wants to go right now. So a few months after we moved here, my marriage fell apart. You know, I got into a domestic situation where I could have been deported because he tried to kidnap my kids and all that. And anyway, I don't know where he is right now, but he's gone. I was a single mom for a very long time. In that situation, Cornerstone, the director of Cornerstone Domestic Abuse Transformational Housing, I was able to qualify for that because I got evicted, obviously, without his support. I was a stay-home mom who became a single mom right away. That executive director of Cornerstone had an accountant in her board, and she said, "Hey, I have an accountant from Canada. Do you need help?" And she and her partner, who became her husband, Durf, of Romer and Comedies, they called me up and say, "Can you start today?" Over the phone.
Wow.
I got a job right away. I started from scratch, basically. When I left Canada, I was already an assistant controller in Canada. So I restarted back as a bookkeeper, which was fine, you know. I didn't have a CPA here. My designation was in Canada. Again, it was starting all over again, rebuilding my life. But yeah. That same employer, to answer your question, was the one who sponsored me first to gave me an annual contract, because that was what was required for me to... I had to keep going back to the border, Canadian border. I would drive 6 hours to the border, get my passport stamped, and the letter of that they're hiring me, all approved. Okay, now you're good to go. Then I can work for a year and then have to do that same process again. And then 1 year I said, okay, either you sponsor me for a green card or I marry the first guy who asks. And so they chose to sponsor me. and that's how I got my green card.
What comes after a green card?
After the green card, it took me several years to get the citizenship. Because of the political situation back then, it was Bush, there was 9/11, and so many. I'm like, in my mind, it was like, okay, if things get any worse, I can just go fly home to Canada.
Canada. Home is Canada. I thought home would be the Philippines. Did you actually stand in a courtroom or wherever with others, raise your right hand and swear allegiance to America?
Yes, I did. I did.
What was that feeling like?
You know, I didn't think I would have been moved, but I was. It was, I heard Obama's voice welcoming us. This was on before his second term. And I was moved to tears. I'm like, oh my God, I felt so proud and I felt so blessed to be given that opportunity to be a citizen of the Philippines, to be a citizen of, you know, of Canada, and now the United States, I'm like, what a blessing. What, oh my God, such, it's so great. It felt so, so great. I was crying.
I wonder why you can have three citizenships. I mean, I can understand the Philippines because you were born there.
Right.
The Canadian thing is because you left the Philippines to go to Canada.
Yeah.
But now that you're in America and you become a U.S. citizen,
mm-hmm.
That's kind of cool almost to yeah. have. Where are you from? Philippines, Canada, United yeah. States, in that order.
Yeah.
Okay. And then. Then a state, then of course the state of Minnesota, which you never heard of until your ex-husband got a job offer.
Yeah, like, why Minnesota?
I mean, was it like, where is Minnesota?
Right? And people ask me all the time, from the Philippines to the cold, like, why?
Yeah.
Like, to Winnipeg, why?
Do you recall seeing your first snowfall?
Oh, yeah. I was wearing loafers and... I was not watching the weather, and I got out of... I was a drapery cutter at that time, so pretty naive. Well, I still am, I guess. Smartened up in some ways. But anyway, I opened the door, and there's pile high of snow, and my ride couldn't get to me fast enough. So I was at A&W restaurant, you know, having their A&W root beer and Sal's bear steak. That was my favorite thing to order at that restaurant, and I was just waiting patiently for him. And then I knew somehow that I didn't want that to be a traumatic experience, so I played in the snow and I did whatever. I wrote my name test, because I remember this because I have pictures of it, you know. And I see my picture, like, with a shovel and that. And so it could have been a very traumatic experience, because I was stranded there for many hours. But I chose not to. And I made fun of it. We walked to the store and bought supplies in case we don't know how... Well, how long it would take for the snow to disappear.
A huge snowfall brings people together, you know, and it's kind of nice to be in your house with the fireplace or whatever and
yes.
Have to negotiate to get to work. And we Minnesotans generally get to work regardless of the weather.
Right.
And, of course, we have our special days that we shut down the schools because of the different... problems that the school bus drivers would have negotiating some of the country roads.
Right.
We're going to take a final break and come back and wrap it up, Tess. How does that sound?
Good. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
All right. We will be back in just a moment with our guest this morning. And her name is Tess Vergara, and she is a life coach. And we'll wrap this up right after this message.
It takes special skills to be a Daikin Comfort Pro. Let's listen in as he senses an old inefficient system's imminent demise.
So costly. Tormented by an ongoing battle over the thermostat. Its days are numbered.
You got all that by waving your hand in the air in our living room?
Get to know your local Daikin Comfort Pro.
This is Andy Straits with Straits 72 Degrees, your local third-generation business. Call me at 645-4040 or straightsheating.com.
Heritage Dental Care in Northfield is a general dental clinic specializing in a variety of dental procedures and services. Make an appointment today with Doctors David Brust, David Buck, Bo Stanley, or Michael Thompson. New patients and emergencies welcome 5 days a week at Heritage Dental Care.
We're back live and in color on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota. Tess, we're back, and it's 9 minutes before. It is 11 o'clock, and I don't want to wrap this up because I think you have a lot of stories that I would find very, very interesting. However, you know, with just a few minutes left, we're going to also talk about your appearance on Sunday in Bloomington to wrap it up. But before we go there... what other interesting stories do you have in regards to your... did you learn English in the Philippines?
In the Philippines, yes.
Was that a mandatory course that you had to take?
it's not a mandatory course. Our curriculum was taught in English. We actually had a Filipino subject.
Okay.
So the books are printed in English. The conversation was said in, at least in the school where I went,
okay.
which was a private
now,
school.
Now, at home, of course, Lou and Billy might have been out of the house while you were going through your grade school years, and then there was Cheats 10 years ahead of you, and you probably could observe her, or Beth in particular, the uh-huh. sister that's 3 years older than you. Did that mean that you spoke English in the household, and did your parents, who spoke two different dialects mm-hmm. of Filipino language, not understand English?
They spoke good English, too.
They did? Mm-hmm. Okay. Where did
and,
they learn
and
that?
They spoke Spanish. Well, at least my mom spoke a little bit of Spanish,
okay.
too. Where did they learn it? Oh, God. Through school. I think the U.S. language or English was really... It wasn't the official language, but if you wanted to survive and thrive, and you got to learn the language. And for us, it wasn't mandatory, but it was almost expected.
Do you miss your home, your language that you spoke with your siblings when you call and talk to any of them, or they call you or you Skype or whatever? Do you do your home language just to have that feeling?
No, there's no missing it because it's still very much a part of my life. You know, I have Filipino friends I talk to. It's just talking to you was different. It's like, or, you know, when you had that exercise with me earlier to talk in my language, it's like, oh, okay, that's different. It's like meeting a friend, and automatically there's an automatic, like I said, we are habituated beings, right? So there's that automatic hi, and then you speak in the language again, and it's a back and forth automatic thing, and it's beautiful. So it's not really I'm missing it. What I kind of regret is not having taught my children the language while they were growing up.
Yeah. Do you speak Canadian?
Well, Canadian English.
Yeah.
It totally messed up my my English.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's English from Canada or, you know, or the U.S. anymore. So at the accounting firm that I worked for, and I had to take TOEFL to, there was a time I was considering sitting for the board exam to take CPA, and I was required to take test of English as first language, and I was like, can they not know hearing me speak that I actually speak English, that this is now insulting? I had to take it in Canada. Now I have to take it again. I've got two young kids, and da, 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 da. So they teased me that I couldn't speak English and that I was an alien, because I was an alien with a permit to work.
Mm-hmm.
So
tell me all about it. Did you put vinegar on your French fries?
No.
That's kind of a common thing, isn't it, in Canada?
In Canada and Filipinos, they have, and when I say they, it's because my sister, Beth, she likes dipping stuff on vinegar and garlic, soy sauce, and that. I kind of like it bland.
Okay.
Or the natural taste of the food.
What would you say Winnipeg has to offer?
Pierogies. Winnipeg has lots to offer. I was just not grateful while I was there, because especially the first few years when I didn't have the car, you know, I could remember my nose, my nostril hair freezing, you know, and all bundled up with just my eyes peeking out and waiting for the bus. And I wasn't grateful for what it has to offer, but it actually is a wealth of, you know, you talk about family getting together. There was a lot of that, a lot of cultures.
diversity and engagement.
Did it have a Filipino community?
Oh, yes.
And that's where you, it's like a magnet, you go there?
Yeah, it's a very strong Filipino, there's lots of Filipino restaurants too. I competed for Miss Philippines Manitoba in 1987, fresh from the Philippines.
Wow. Miss Manitoba.
Miss Manitoba.
Did you compete with a lot of other young ladies?
Yes, there were 20... Some, like 22 candidates.
Wow.
And I ended up in the top three.
Oh, woo, that's pretty good.
Yes.
What was your talent?
I sang a Whitney Houston song.
Which
and
one?
I was Miss Talent.
Which one?
Do
you remember?
I remember. I sang Home for the pre-qualifying.
Uh-huh.
And then there were like two or three of us at the end, and then for the final I sang You Give Good Love by Whitney Houston.
Okay. And you finished in the top three.
I finished in
Did
the top
that open
three.
Any doors for you?
Self-confidence.
Yeah.
That, you know, because I was like, my sister, I grew up with the thinking that Beth was so much prettier than me, or at least that was,
yeah,
again, the reflection people,
yeah,
were feeding me. Growing up, so I'm like, why not her? Why me? Oh, she can join next year. You know, I'm like, that's weird.
Did that have a bathing suit competition?
No.
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 Okay.
I don't know that I would have been that bold, but there was a portion of it that we had to do a fashion show.
Uh-huh.
And I remember walking in the catwalk with shorts on, but I was wearing nylons underneath.
Okay.
So and there was a lot of modesty back then.
Yeah. Well, it's getting towards 11 o'clock, and Tessa, I knew I was going to enjoy our conversation. And thank you for sharing the things that you did share.
Thank you.
And congratulations on being a citizen of the Philippines, Canada, and the great United States,
yes,
of America.
So honored.
And once again, we'll promote what you're doing on Sunday. And Tess Vergara is going to be talking. She's a strategic interventionist and awakening coach. And she coaches courage and vision for moving forward. The next steps are to realize that you are a wonderful joy and you should discover yourself. Is that,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that means it's time to bid you farewell. I love to use that word, bid. And we will do that in about 14 seconds. So, Tess Vergara, thank you very much. I hope this interview was what you anticipated.
Thank you. Well, yeah. I wasn't anticipating anything. I'm like, 2 hours, oh my God, what are we going to talk about? But thank you so much for that opportunity to go back into, yeah, my roots and recollect parts of me. That was fun.
It went fast, didn't it?
It went fast.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Tess Vergara. I'm Wayne Eddy, and this concludes the Wayne Eddy Affair for today. On your radio station, of course, we are the one, KYMN Radio, 95.1 FM, 1080 on your AM dial. It is 11 o'clock.
Fishing, kayaking, canoeing, camping. Those are just some of the reasons why people love the outdoors. Listen to Northfield Outdoors and explore all that nature has to offer with your hosts, Dave Vesladol and Andy Behem. Expect plenty of information delivered by a couple of guys who live it and guest experts. Northfield Outdoors, brought to you by Professional Pride Realty, airs every other Saturday at 11 a.m.
If you go to California, I'll stay in Louisiana. Will you still be my lady? Will I still be your man?